Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Bennett, and each week I bring you new and exciting guests to talk about various aspects of the paranormal. And I'm sorry, last week we did have some technical problems, so my guest, Stan Hughes, was not able to come on, but I did reschedule him for July, so I hope you can all join us then. But I hope you all enjoyed our show before that as well with psychic teacher and intuitive medium Anna Robles. What an interesting lady. She sure did have some interesting stories to tell. But tonight, we're moving on to a different subject, an exciting new guest you probably haven't heard before. Maybe you have, but she is the author of a new book called A Haunted History of Atlanta and North Georgia, which has just been released by Schiffer Books. And Schiffer Books is actually the publisher who worked with me as well. They've published a couple of my books, so often they'll give me one of the first opportunities to talk with their new authors. So we're very lucky to have Corinna Underwood on the show tonight. Her book, A Haunted History of Atlanta in North Georgia, is all about southern ghosts from early history to the present day. And tonight, Corinna is going to share with us some first-person encounters, and not only that, she's going to explain different types of hauntings and how to conduct a paranormal investigation and give us lots of interesting stories. And also, hopefully, we'll have some information about people who want to go to Georgia and try and see a ghost for themselves, because I understand that there are some ghostly walks that you can take in this area. We have some interesting stories. We're going to talk about ghosts from the Civil War, ghostly Southern Belles, life-saving guardian spirits, and spine-tingling demonic entities. And we've got lots of haunted places to explore tonight. The Fox Theater, the Dahlonega Gold Museum, that sounds interesting, the Shakespeare Tavern, the Eagle Tavern Museum. Seems like there's a lot of taverns that are haunted in a lot of areas. The Roswell Mill and many other places. So this is going to be a pretty exciting show tonight. And remember, this is a call-in show. So for any of you who want to call in, grab a pen. I'll be giving out the number. The number is actually toll-free. It's 888-228-4494. We'd love to hear from you if you just have a question or a comment or want to share a story. The number is 888-228-4494. But first, let's get to our guest, pioneering ghost researcher and author, Corinna Underwood. Corinna, thanks so much for coming on to the show.
Thank you for inviting me, Preston. It's a pleasure.
Well, congratulations on your new book. It looks great and really nice cover.
Thank you.
So, ghosts, huh? This is one of the questions I love to ask people, because growing up, I was really skeptical of ghosts and didn't believe in any of this stuff. And what about you? Were you skeptical growing up of ghosts? Or
actually, not at all. I think my initial fascination with ghosts came from a very early age. I grew up in England in a town in the middle of the country that had a lot of historical buildings and a lot of haunted legend. And when I was a young girl, it seemed that just about everyone that you would meet had a story to tell, either about their own personal paranormal experiences or one of the very well-known local legends from the area. And so it was almost an everyday occurrence that you would hear these stories. And so I was totally fascinated from a very young age. And as I got older, I continued to read about stories and collect people's personal experiences.
Once the subject grabs you, it's hard to let go.
That's
so
right.
England is, you know, it seems, I've heard a lot of people say that England, I mean, ghosts are just like normal there practically. I mean, would you say there's less skepticism in England? Are there more ghosts there?
Maybe a bit of both. I don't know. There's certainly, as I said, just about everyone you meet, you know, you can be just sitting in a bar and you'll overhear someone come up with a story about a haunting. And I guess because there are so many historic buildings and historic places, not just buildings, but ancient sites there, you know, burial mounds, stone circles.
Right.
So there's a lot of legends attached. And I do think perhaps people are a little less skeptical there.
Well, it certainly has a longer history than a lot of other areas. So that might be another factor.
So, that's true.
What inspired you to move from, you know, just kind of collecting stories to actually doing some real investigations? Because I'm here, you've got a whole book out.
Well, I started, when I moved to Georgia, I started writing for Art Bells magazine, After Dark, which I've been doing for 5 years now.
Oh.
And that kind of inspired me to talk to more people about their personal experiences as well as just collecting the legends of haunted sites. And I was very fortunate when I was researching for my book that I got to, I actually spent a night in the Fox Theater in Atlanta with the Georgia Ghost Hound paranormal investigation team.
Oh, really?
So it was very interesting to get to see a paranormal investigation firsthand.
Right. Well, what was that experience like? I mean, can you walk us through it? And
well, it was interesting to see actually how they conduct an investigation. And although during the course of the night we didn't actually have any visual experiences, but one of the sensitives that we had with us on that occasion, she did actually feel the presences in some of the areas. And we all got some quite interesting orb photographs in the same places. And it was also very wonderful to spend the night in a very beautiful and historic building, which does have a reputation of having a number of ghosts.
Right, right. So, have you had experiences before, growing up? Have you?
Not when I was very young, but in later life. About the strangest experience I've had actually happened about 15 years ago when I was still living in England, and I was living in a house that I really don't know a great deal of history about or who had lived there previously, other than to say that it wasn't a particularly old building. It was built, I think, in the 1950s. And I'd lived there for several months and hadn't noticed anything strange going on, but a couple of friends of mine that had been there from time to time had said they felt very uncomfortable upstairs.
Right.
And one night, myself and two friends were having dinner, and all of a sudden we heard this loud crash from upstairs. So we all went running up to see what happened, and we were checking all the rooms, you know, making sure there were no windows open or that no one had broken into the house, and we couldn't find any sign of what could have possibly made the noise. And then we all met together on the landing, and I looked down at the floor, and the lock, the bathroom door had a one of the old fashioned metal locks on, and it was lying in the middle of the floor with the screws still in place in the lock, with traces of wood on the threads of the screws as though it had been torn out of the door and flung down on the floor.
Huh. Wow.
Which was very unnerving, to say the least. And I really don't know to this day how it possibly, what could have happened. But I couldn't go back upstairs for a few days after that.
I don't blame you. But after all, ghosts are just people, right, for the most part, don't you think so? Are they dangerous, would you say?
Well, other than that, I've had no experience that I felt threatened by, but I have heard stories of where apparently there are certain entities that are not just people but can actually cause physical harm. In fact, one of the stories in my book, which is about the Eagle Tavern in Watkinsville, is reported to have a quite a nasty entity in the basement there. And on one occasion, there was a the Northeast Georgia paranormal group were in there doing an investigation, And one of the members of the team was in the basement with a video camera trying to take some pictures. And all of a sudden, he had a crushing pain in his hand, and he dropped the camera on the floor, and everyone rushed him out. And I couldn't really explain what had happened at the time, but the next day, he was in so much pain that he went to the hospital and had his hand x-rayed, and he actually had a torn tendon and a fractured bone in his hand. And wow. Apparently what had been going on at the time, that they believed instigated this kind of reaction, as he'd been taunting the entity in there and telling him, you know, he didn't really believe he was there. Will you come out and show yourself? And I guess he maybe pushed it a little bit too far.
You know, well, ghosts can apparently see us and hear us, but my question is, and this is something I always ask ghost researchers because it just baffles me, is how do you think, or do you have any theories as to how ghosts are able to pull a lock out of a door or to, you know, break someone's hand like that? Or, you know, how do they affect the physical environment if they are supposedly non-physical?
Well, I wonder sometimes if in fact they, these entities can make their presence known by drawing on energy around them, be it electrical energy or energy from people living around them. Perhaps then they can take that one step further and enable themselves to somehow interact with the physical. There's numerous cases, I'm sure you've heard stories before, where physical objects are moved.
Right, right. Well, they definitely can. They definitely have the ability to affect the physical environment in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the more unusual ways of ghostly manifestations that you've run across or you've heard of in your research? Because, I mean, you know, there's apparitions, of course, and cold spots, but ghosts can manifest in a huge variety of ways, I think. And you know what I mean?
Yes, yes, that's true. I think that the Watkins Tavern story is the Eagle Tavern story is the most unusual one I've ever come across. But some of the other stories in the book, the Fox Theatre, for example, has several different ghosts. In the auditorium, some of the security staff have actually seen people or ghosts sitting in the auditorium late at night when the theatre's closed and there's no one there. And there's also a ghost in the basement who is believed to be the ghost of a man who was hired in the late 20s to stoke up the old coal furnace. And apparently back then he used to live down there. And perhaps he's still very attached to the basement because apparently when different people go down there, they feel a presence. And he seems to be very friendly towards women because when women go down there, they usually describe the atmosphere as being very relaxed and comfortable.
Right.
But when men go down there, they feel very uncomfortable. It feels very cold. And on several occasions when there have been workers down there doing repairs, apparently their tools have gone missing, sometimes to be found outside the basement, sometimes not to be found at all.
Wow. Very interesting. So what do you suppose causes a ghost? I mean, like, the ghost of this guy you're talking about is apparently attached to his this location. But I mean, why do some people become ghosts and not others, do you think?
Well, I think this goes back to the different types of hauntings. I think one of the probably less frequent but most fascinating types of haunting is the intelligent ghost, in which case the ghost will be attached to a location or person, such as the guy in the basement of the Fox. And the experts that I've discussed this with agree that this type of haunting often occurs when the person's death is either caused by a traumatic or a tragic event. And in some cases, that the person not always be aware that they are dead yet. Unable to let go and move on.
That's always baffling. How can someone not be aware that they have died? I mean, it seems to me it's got to... you know what I mean?
Yeah, I see what you mean. Like if it was so sudden and traumatic.
Right. Perhaps they don't have a memory of it.
Yeah.
Or perhaps they didn't believe in life after death. I've always wondered about what happens to those kind of people.
And they also may just be very attached to their home or their people, their loved ones who are still alive. That could be another reason why they didn't want to move on.
Right. So there's different types of ghosts, would you say? I mean, are there non-human ghosts? And I mean, what's your theory on the poltergeist? Is it a kind of a fragment of a disturbed child's personality, which is sort of exteriorized, or perhaps uncontrolled mediumship? Or I mean, there's so many different theories that...
Yeah, there are a lot of different theories. The general one, the most popular one that I've come across amongst the paranormal researchers is that poltergeists is not actually caused by ghosts, that kind of activity, but often by very strong emotional tension from someone living in the house,
right,
where that type of activity occurs.
Right, that makes sense. Certainly there's a lot of cases where there's a disturbed teenager or someone.
Yes. And I think the most common of all that I've come across is the messenger-type haunting, where the spirit of a recently deceased family member or loved one appears to someone close to them, and as though they just want to let them know that they're okay and they're happy before they move on.
Right, a ghost with a purpose. I think that's,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that, in my research, that's, I think, true with a lot of cases. In fact, I just spoke with a lady, gosh, was it last night or the night before? And she was describing to me how she had several ghostly encounters, and one was really fascinating. I wonder what you think of this kind of story, because I've heard of it before. She says that on the night her grandmother died, she received a phone call and answered it, and it was her grandmother saying, and who basically just said briefly, goodbye, just wanted to say goodbye. And her sister also received a phone call the same night and thought it was a crank call and was really upset about it. But
mm-hmm.
It's a phone call from a ghost. I've heard that before. Do you?
Yes,
do you?
I've heard that before, yes.
It's fascinating how ghosts are able to affect the physical environment. Apparently, they do have a lot of abilities to control electromagnetic equipment of various types.
Yes, it would definitely seem so.
Is that something you've run across in your research then?
I think predominantly with stuff to do like EVPs, electronic voice phenomena.
Oh, have you done that?
It seems to be a growing trend now in paranormal research. And I've heard some very interesting results from the experiments. Some very obscure and that I can't really say. I could clearly hear what was being said, but I have heard some recordings that are definitely audible and clearly spoken.
Well, I haven't really done much of that type of research, but yeah, I agree with you that it's growing and there's a lot of interest in it. But a lot of people have told me that they've gotten like curse words and stuff like that. So I think you have to be careful. It's kind of like using a Ouija board, I think, in some ways.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, well, what do you think of the Ouija board? Is that dangerous?
I think it depends what exactly you're doing with it. I think, you know, opening those kind of channels can be dangerous.
Right. Well, I agree with you, too. I think that, you know, it can be dangerous, but if you're doing it right, I mean, I've worked with some professional mediums who are able to do table lifting and things like that.
Uh-huh.
And without any that effects. So everyone, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight is Corinna Underwood. We're talking about her brand new book, A Haunted History of Atlanta and North Georgia. And you can get this book, I'm assuming, on Amazon.com. And Corinna, do you have a website that you'd like to give out?
I do, yes. It's www.ambiguousmedia.net.
What is that again? Big U.S. Media?
Ambiguous Media.
Can you spell that?
AmbiguousMedia.
Okay. Very good. And if anyone out there would like to have a question for our guest, or would like to share a story or have a comment, we'd love to hear from you. I'll give you the toll-free number again. It's 888-228-4494. That's 888-228-4494. And we're talking about ghosts. So, Corinna, now, what do you think, in your opinion, makes, you know, Atlanta ghosts different from ghosts, say, in another area? I mean, either ghosts of, you know, Native Americans there, or Civil War soldiers. I guess you have a lot of that going on there.
There are a lot of civil battlegrounds here, and there's one I have included one story in the book where it's reported that there are a number of ghostly reenactments of the Civil War. I was told this story actually by several members of one of the Alabama reenactment group.
Right.
And on numerous occasions when they've actually been doing in the middle of a reenactment, they have seen soldiers there, and that they know are not part of their group because their uniforms have been so authentic. And
yeah,
when the soldiers, the ghostly soldiers have been approached, they just disappear into the woods.
Wow. That's pretty intense. So I imagine that happens, you know. Can you imagine what that must be like for the ghosts seeing this war reenactment? I mean, clearly that's what's bringing them out.
Yeah, probably. That must be, I'm sure it's equally unusual for them as it is for our guys.
So, are there other ghosts of Civil War soldiers that you know of going on there?
At Tunnel Hill, yes, there's also there's been a number of occasions where the leader of the group has seen strange mists appear, seemingly out of nowhere, and he said he had a very strange, very uncomfortable feeling. And as he started to move away, he looked back at the mist that was gathering. Not sort of a general mist, but quite a localized mist. And he said that as he looked at it, he could see the form of a horse beginning to take shape in the mist.
Wow.
And he departed very quickly.
Well, that's pretty unusual. You don't get a lot of stories of animal ghosts and horse ghosts. You know.
They're not at all. In fact, I don't recall coming across stories of animal ghosts before.
You know, I get occasional accounts of dogs and cats, but horses and other animals are pretty rare.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Well, here's another question that's kind of off the wall. But what do you think about the theory of why ghosts are wearing clothes? I mean, what if these are just the spirits? I mean, how can someone have ghostly clothes? And you know, for that matter, why a ghostly car or a ghostly carriage being, or a ghostly ship even? You know what I mean?
It's a very interesting question. In fact, the other thing that I've often pondered is, why would you see a ghost holding an object? Well, you know, it's the same kind of question, I guess.
Exactly.
And one theory I've come across is that rather than being actual manifesting entities that are coming through to the present, that what ghosts are almost like an imprint in time, sort of like a memory tape running.
Right, a residual just, type thing.
Yes, that is triggered from time to time. And so in that sense, I suppose, it would explain why the ghosts look as they would have in their past.
Yes, but that doesn't explain the cases where ghosts interact with people, because clearly that's not an echo of some past tragic event. These ghosts can see us, right? And they're
right,
still dressed.
Right.
They're still carrying objects. So we're still stuck with the mystery of...
Yes, I don't think it's a question that's going to be easily answered.
Oh, too bad. Okay, well, then I do have another question, and that's about, like, so-called demonic entities. And there's a lot of controversy about whether, you know, non-human ghosts, and I don't mean like animal ghosts, but, you know, non-human intelligent ghosts, whether or not they even exist. And Hans Holzer, he's a very famous ghost hunter. He said he never ran across any type of ghost that he couldn't explain as a human being. So I was wondering what your theory is on that.
Well, to be honest with you, I've always taken his point of view either, because I had never actually heard of a demonic entity or a demonic haunting in the sense that it was not or could not be in any way related to a human person. I mean, I know that, and I'm sure we've all heard of stories where the haunting has been unpleasant for the living people involved, but I had never come across a story until I came across the story of the demon in the basement at the Watkinsville Tavern.
Uh-oh.
That is... you know, there's anything like that at all. And I've not experienced it myself, so I think I would be inclined to look for another explanation than some evil demon.
Right. Well, I'm kind of, I flip-flop a little bit because, I've run across cases myself which don't seem to involve a human ghost. People are describing this very large, tall, black apparition, and it seems to be pretty consistent in that regard. And these ghosts are, whatever they are, pretty nasty and cause the worst type of haunting, usually.
Mm-hmm.
So what was going on with this case that you're talking about?
Well, actually, it's interesting that you should mention the tall, dark figure, because at the same place in the basement, actually, that same night and on other occasions, the members of staff there have described seeing a tall, almost formless, much too tall to be a human figure.
Exactly.
Kind of materializing there. In fact, on one occasion when another group was in there doing an investigation, the group were in the basement, and the owner was upstairs watching through the monitor, through the video camera, and her son was down there with them, and he was the last one of the four people to go into the basement. And she said that as she was watching the monitor, she suddenly saw another figure behind him, just a black, kind of formless figure. And she said that she just got on the radio to them to ask them who else was down there, and she saw this figure stretching out an arm to grab his shoulder, and she told them what she could see, and they all left very quickly. And but there was no one else other than the four of them down there.
Well, that's pretty spooky.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if that's the type of ghost if a ghost can hurt someone, I think this is the type of ghost that, could do it and might do it. And well, what do you think of possession. Do you think that, have you ever run across any cases of that, or what do you think that that's
possible? I have not actually run across any cases of possession, no.
Do you think it's, you know, have you heard of it? I mean, what do you think of the possibility of ghosts possessing beings?
I think I'm very skeptical about something like that. I'm not sure that I would explain it as someone being taken over by an external entity.
Right, right.
Have you come across experiences of possession?
Well, there's one case that does come to mind with these two ladies that lived in a haunted apartment in Van Nuys. This is in Southern California near where I live. And they had terrible manifestations. It started out with knocking noises and objects moving around and cold spots and weird smells, and it just kept on getting stronger and moved to apparitions. And then these apparitions, whenever the two girls would argue, the apparitions would appear, and one evening they moved into one of the girls, into her body, she said, and it hurt really bad, and she couldn't breathe, and she had this image of this lady who had greasy hair and bad teeth and just really unpleasant-looking entity of some type. And it finally moved out of her, and she could breathe again. But she said she could still see this image of this face that was kind of like in her brain from that point on. They continued to have problems for quite some time. So, and I've talked to other people who've been attacked, I guess you would say. They've been pushed and held down onto their bed by these big, tall, black forms. And one guy I also talked to said his friend was apparently possessed and started speaking a different language. And it was only lasted a few minutes, but he said they both said it was the scariest thing they've ever experienced.
I can imagine.
So I'm convinced that there's some, you know, could possibly happen to at least a certain extent.
But
I haven't had to bring in an exorcist. And so have you thought about how hauntings like begin and end? I mean, have you ever brought in ghost hunters or psychics to try and, what would you say, end a haunting or send the ghost off to the other side?
I talked to Patrick Burns, who's the founder of the Georgia Ghost Hounds. He has told me that on a couple of occasions he has been able to end a haunting by talking to the spirits and explaining that it can move on, and it can move on to its loved ones on the other side, and that it doesn't have to remain attached to its earthly life. And he seems to be of the opinion that in these cases, these spirits were not able to move on because they didn't know how, or they weren't aware that they could.
Right. Well, that's kind of interesting. So what about child ghosts? Have you ever run across anything like that?
Yes, there's a couple of child ghosts in the book, actually. There's a lovely old house in Rome, Georgia, called the Claremont House, which was built in 1882 by a wealthy cotton farmer for his wife and children. And it became a bed and breakfast in the early 90s. And I spoke to a couple of people who were the innkeepers from 1999 to 2002. And their experiences in the house started almost immediately that they'd moved in there. And it began with their daughter one night. I was watching TV in bed, and then she turned off the television. And a few minutes later, the television popped back on again. And so she turned it off again, and this went on for quite some time until she'd left the room because she was so afraid. And a few weeks later, there was another room across the hall, and the innkeeper's wife used to collect the little musical carousel ornaments, and she would keep them in that room. And from time to time, they'd walk past the hall and hear one of them playing music and would go in the room and there would be no one there. And that was a frequent occurrence that whole time that they were there. And then guests in the hotel reported seeing a young girl in a kind of old-fashioned looking dress, about 4 or 5 years old, going out of the carousel room into the daughter's bedroom. And when they did some, the innkeepers did some research into the background of the house, they found that the landowner who built the house had a young daughter named Julia who died when she was only 4 years old.
Oh, wow.
So they think that they had the company of the ghost of Julia living with them the time they were there. And she was never disruptive, but just seemed to like to play with the musical carousels.
Wow, wow. Well, child ghosts, I've always thought, are among the saddest type. I mean, it's just, it's sad to think that, you know, children are left there alone,
mm-hmm.
if that's what's happening. So you've got a lot of other haunted places in your book. I mean, what are some of the other places that are interesting? Is the Dahlonega Gold Museum or the...
Dahlonega Gold Museum?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... no one's quite sure who the ghost might be in there, but apparently he's been heard walking around upstairs in the museum upstairs, and they have a... an old gold press in the museum, which he will occasionally turn on from time to time.
Huh. That's interesting. And so would you say, what's the most haunted type of building? It seems to me that hotels and theaters and bars.
Yes, in Atlanta, I'd say it's definitely hotels and theaters.
Huh.
Places where a lot of people have come and gone over time, and
right. So, what would you say is like the most haunted place going on in Atlanta, in North Georgia, for that matter?
I think the Fox Theater has probably the most different types of haunting there, and as a historical area, probably Roswell, which is just north of Atlanta, because there's a number of buildings there that are repeatedly haunted. In fact, there's a great ghost walk that that you can do there, which runs year-round. The interesting thing about this particular ghost tour is from time to time when the guide is taking people around to the different buildings. I think there's about 8 or 9 locations on the walk. And some people have been fortunate enough to experience some paranormal phenomena while they're actually taking the ghost tour.
See, wow, that's really amazing. I mean, I guess it shouldn't be if we know where that these hauntings are taking place and we're going to where the hauntings are, but... What were some of the... I mean, you already mentioned some already, didn't you? Some of the cases that people have seen on these ghost walks.
There's one that particularly sticks in my mind where there's an old cotton mill in Roswell, and on part of the cotton mill's actually not on the ghost tour now because the area's closed off, but there are some buildings that were built there for the mill workers, and the original buildings are still there, although they've been renovated now. And at the time that they were doing the ghost tours about a year ago, when they just started renovating the buildings, there were no doors or windows in the buildings, you know.
Right.
And the tour guide had to stop in front of the houses and was explaining about the mill workers, and that people had seen lights in the windows and figures in the windows, even though they'd been empty for years and years. And she was standing with her back to this particular house with the group in front of her looking at us. And she said that all of a sudden, everybody just, people were screaming, letting out startled noises, and just ran down the street. And she turned around and didn't see anything behind her, but when she caught up with the group, apparently they had seen the figure of a woman walk back and forth across the open doorway, and they described her as being dressed in a skirt with an apron and a little bonnet on.
Huh.
And that was pretty fascinating.
Yeah. Why do you suppose people are so scared of ghosts? I mean, they are mostly, for the most part, just people who actually probably need our help, if you think about it.
I think, I wonder if we've got the media to blame for that. The fictional stories where ghosts get a bad rap, I think.
I mean, what do you think about ghosts who help people? Is it possible for a ghost to save someone's life?
Yes, I think so. Actually, I've got a story about that as well in the book from the an old house in Dunwoody in Atlanta, where apparently the family who lived there had on a number of occasions seen the ghost of both a young girl and an older man in the hallway. And one evening during a very bad storm, they were about to leave the house through the normal route, down through the front door, and for some reason, the lady said she just had a feeling that they needed to go the other way, almost as though someone was pulling her. And so they turned around and went back out the back way, and just as they turned around, a tree fell on the front of the house.
Wow.
Which would have brought the ceiling down on top of them had they not turned around. And she firmly believes that it was the spirit of the little girl that guided them safely out of the house.
Well, that's pretty dramatic and pretty impressive. Wow. So, let me see. What else did I wanted to ask you? You've definitely given us quite a lot to think about. So let me just throw this question out there. I mean, have you run across any connection with other types of phenomena like UFOs or other paranormal phenomena related to ghosts?
One story that it's actually one of my own experiences, and I'm not sure whether this falls into either or somewhere between the two.
Right.
But on one occasion I was camping on a small campsite up in North Georgia in Dahlonega. And it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and there was no one. I was there with a friend, and there was no one else on any of the other campsites. And we suddenly heard a noise outside, so we both popped our heads out of the tent to take a look. And there was a light coming up the dirt road towards the campsite. And so at first we automatically assumed that someone was walking up the road. So we sat there watching it, waiting to see who would come up. And then as the light got closer, it became apparent that it wasn't someone walking up the road. And what it looked like, it was it was about the size of a basketball, and it was floating about 6 feet in the air.
Wow.
And it was kind of a yellow incandescent glow, but it wasn't illuminating anything around it. And it was the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. It just kind of bobbed along steadily for about 20 feet and then started coming back again. The same really slow bobbing motion. So we had no idea what it could be. We reached into the tent, grabbed a flashlight, and turned on the flashlight. There was nothing there, no there. We went onto the road, walked down a ways to see, and there was no sign of it.
Huh. Well, so you didn't actually see it disappear?
No, it just, once the flashlight was on, that was it. That was the last we saw of it.
Wow, that is bizarre. I mean, that could
and
be...
I'm really not sure what to make of that or how to explain it at all.
Right, right. Well, here's another question for you. What if, should someone do if they do discover that they have a ghost in their house and are dealing with, you know, ghostly activity that they'd prefer not to have going on in the house?
Well, I would recommend contacting their local paranormal investigation group and have them come over and investigate the location. And usually the group will have with them either a sensitive or a psychic medium that can give you advice on how to, what you might be able to do or how they might be able to help you rid yourself of any entities that you might have in your house.
Right, right. So, well, I think that's probably really good advice. And so what would you recommend for people who are beginning their own, you know, to become a ghost investigator? What do, should people do to investigate ghosts?
Well, I think once you've got your particular location, I think the first thing would be to do a little background research about the building, the history of the building. And then as far as the investigation itself, I would do, first of all, a preliminary tour of the building so that you can check out things such as the average temperature, if you're
right,
taking EMF readings. Check, so you've got a baseline, you know, for, to start with. And then I think probably a good thing to do if it's available to you is to use some trigger objects in the building. For example, if there are particular known hot spots, then you might want to put down a trigger object, such as a small object from the location that has a history of being there.
Right.
Or that might have a history of some connection with paranormal activities, and use that as a focal point to measure each change, or to take photographs from during the course of the investigation.
Right, right. I think, like you mentioned, bringing along a sensitive is also, or a medium, I think is a really important step in establishing, if you can, like, bring independent mediums. Which is, I think, you know, hard to do.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Karina, our hour is pretty much up. So, but you've been an amazing guest. Do you have any last messages you want to give to our listeners? I mean, your book is...
Thank you for having me. And if anyone would like to contact me with their stories of hauntings or paranormal activity, I would be only too glad to listen to them.
All right. Do you want to give out an email? Or should you just...
You can contact me through the website. There's an email link there.
And what's the website once more?
The website is www.ambiguousmedia.net.
Okay. Very good. Well, thanks, Karina. As I said, you've been a great guest.
Thank you very much. It's been fun.
I wish you great success on your book. It looks very interesting, and... I hope it's very successful for you.
Thank you, Preston.
And will you come on again? Do you have another book coming out after this one?
I'm working on right now, which is a haunted history of Taos and northern New Mexico.
Oh, very good. I know some people there. I'll have to call them up and ask them if they have any stories for you.
That'd be great. Thank you.
All right. Well, everyone, that is our show tonight. I hope you've enjoyed it. My name is Preston Dennett, and you've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal, and our guest tonight has been Karina Underwood. We've been talking about her brand new book, A Haunted History of Atlanta and North Georgia, which has now just been released by Schiffer Books, who are actually, I think, the leading publishers of regional ghost books. At least currently, they certainly have a lot going on right now. So I hope you all can join us next week when I bring on another guest who will actually be Stanton Friedman, leading UFO researcher. So that's a pretty exciting show, and I hope you can all join us then. Till then, have a wonderful week. Thank you.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.